Our Imperfect World by Taylor Potato. Read by Philia. The day Peter's perfect match is born, it's like a tectonic shift. Peter can feel it in his very bones. He never knew he was lonely before that moment, before his other half came into being. Peter wakes up in the morning with a small white scar on his ring finger that wasn't there when he went to sleep. The sunshine seems a little brighter. The air smelled sweeter. He's heard people talk about this sensation, but he never believed. After all, 18 years is a long time to wait. Most people are born with their scars. Small children with matching marks on their arms or legs will gravitate towards each other. They get to grow up alongside the person they're meant for. They get a whole lifetime with their mate. Peter will be in his late 30s before he can really seek out his partner. But in other ways, he's lucky. A normal human wouldn't be able to track their mate by scent. The second Peter steps outside and takes a few deep breaths, he knows that his match is in Beacon Hills. Some people have to travel thousands of miles to find their match, and a few unfortunate souls are never united with their missing piece. There are horror stories about people whose soulmate died due to birth complications or because of a freak accident. It's always possible that your match could step in front of a bus before you find them. It's said that feeling your soulmate die is the worst experience one can go through. It's like getting your heart ripped out of your chest. Peter follows the scent to the Beacon Hills Hospital. He doesn't go inside. He just sits at the edge of the parking lot and listens. Even amongst all the chaos and the screaming children and beeping monitors and frantic footsteps, he can single out the heart that's beating in exact syncopation with his own. It's the most beautiful rhythm he's ever heard. It's captivating. Hypnotic. Peter always thought that he wasn't meant to have a soulmate, that he was too rotten and broken to deserve such a precious thing. But as he's sitting there, a strange emotion wells in his chest. It's something he's never felt before. It's not lust or covetous desire. It's something simple and pure. It feels almost like there's a string threaded into his ribcage and it's connected to someone else. His mate is at the other end of the string, tugging him forward, gentle but insistent. For a moment, Peter wonders if this is his salvation. He isn't sure he wants to be saved. "You're sure?" Talia frowns. She sprawled across the leaves, long dark hair casting strange patterns on the forest floor. Peter is leaning back against a tree, sitting on the roots, looking up at the sky. "Yes, of course I'm sure. It's not so common for a human and a born wolf to be paired. I don't know what you want me to do about it. The kid's a purebred, squishy Homo sapien. I tracked the scent all the way back to the Stilinski house. You couldn't find a pair of more white-bred, unsupernatural parents if you tried." "You shouldn't have done that. It's a newborn child. It's not like I climbed in the window or something. I just wanted to see where he'd be living." "He?" "Yeah. I mean, that's probably not a thing we need to tell Mom just yet. There's time. It's not like I chose for this to happen. It could have been a girl. I like girls too. But it's not, so it doesn't matter. If he's your soulmate, I'm sure Mom will love him. But you know you're going to have to wait, Peter. You can't introduce yourself into his life too early. It wouldn't be fair to either of you." "Why do you always assume that I'm going to act selfish and unreasonable?" "Because you're my brother and I know you." Talia grins. "I'll leave the kid alone. Don't worry about it." "I hope that's true, for both of your sakes." The first time they meet, it's an accident. Though Peter knows nobody would believe him, he did try his best to stay away. But a guy has to eat. He has to go to the grocery store. And as he's rounding the corner of the cereal aisle, the smell hits him. Peter stops in his tracks and just stares. Mrs. Stilinski is standing there, looking at the Cheerios. She's tall and beautiful, her curly brown hair pulled back into a ponytail. She's wearing a nice floral dress. It hangs off her thin frame like she's a department store mannequin. His eyes drop lower. A toddler is holding her hand. The kid must be about 3. He's wearing a pair of red corduroy overalls and a blue t-shirt. His soft dark hair is sticking straight up in some places. He's got big brown eyes and moles on his chin, and he's got his thumb in his mouth. The kid turns and sees Peter first. The second they make eye contact, the kid drops his mother's hand and teeters forward. The tiny human walks like he's drunk, but his intended destination is obvious. Peter thinks about running away, but his feet are rooted to the spot. The string tied to his ribcage gets shorter, draws them closer together. The next thing he knows, the kid has grabbed onto his leg and is looking up at him and giggling. "Hi," the kid whispers, soft and breathless. "Hi yourself." Peter can't stop himself from smiling. "I like doggies. Do you have a doggy?" Mrs. Stilinski hears the noise and turns around. "Stiles!" She rushes forward. "Oh gosh, I'm sorry. He's usually shy around strangers. I don't know what's gotten into him." "It's fine," Peter mumbles. Mrs. Stilinski reaches down to pick the kid, Stiles, up. But the second she pulls him away from Peter, he starts crying. Peter doesn't know what else to do, so he backs away. Gets out of the store. But his heart is racing and he's dizzy. He's not used to feeling this unbalanced. He doesn't know how he's expected to deal with it. Peter moves away. He goes up to Seattle, finds an apartment, and gets a job bartending. He's an Omega wolf like he's always been. No pack. No sense of loyalty. He's just waiting for the day he becomes an alpha. Because deep down, Peter knows he's meant to be an alpha. He's not designed to take orders or work within a group. He's a born leader or a born con artist. He figures it's all the same in the end. He knows which buttons to push so that people will give him what he wants. The problem is, he can't have the one thing he's really after. He just has to be patient, and it grates on him. With his pretty face and charming smile, people trust him more easily than they should. He has lots of meaningless sex and wakes up in the morning feeling like he's cheating on a kid that's about to go into kindergarten. It's all sorts of fucked up. He thinks that maybe Stiles is not his salvation, but his punishment. Because Peter feels empty when he's this far away. He feels like he's missing something he never knew he needed before. He goes to bed with an ache in his chest, and it's still there when he wakes up. On the full moon, Peter runs through the woods and tears tiny animals to shreds. There's no established pack in Seattle, but he's not the only wolf around. His eyes turn from yellow to icy blue the night he runs into another Omega in the forest and they get into a fight. It all happens so fast. One minute, they're rolling around, biting each other, catching more air than skin. The next minute, there's a sickening snap and the other wolf goes limp. They rolled over a rock. Its neck broke. Peter didn't mean to do it. But the startling thing about it is how little remorse he feels. Even if it was an accident, it's a power rush like he's never experienced before. He stands there, over the other wolf's body, and he feels like a god. The ache in his chest fades to background noise. He's drowning in the flood of adrenaline. He rips the other wolf's throat out just to taste the blood. Of course he doesn't get caught. The police finds the body and it gets written off as an animal attack. Peter gets a call from Talia saying their mother died defending the pack from hunters. It goes unspoken that Peter did not become the alpha, that it must be Talia. The taste of bitter disappointment and rage is easier to deal with than the sorrow of loss. But he moves back to Beacon Hills anyway. When Talia sees that his eyes have changed, she's stunned, then disappointed. He revels in it. Perhaps he wasn't meant to be the alpha yet, because he needs to become the villain first. Peter turns 25, and that makes Stiles 7. Sometimes Peter goes running through the woods behind the Stilinski house and pretends that he doesn't know exactly what he's doing. He gets close enough to hear Stiles' heartbeat, and it's soothing in ways he can't even begin to comprehend. Once or twice, in the middle of the night, he goes into their backyard and sticks his nose through the open kitchen window. The first time he does it, he smells baked apples and ice cream and innocence. The second time he does it, he smells illness. He's probably the first to know that Mrs. Stilinski is sick. But it's not like he can do anything about it. He knows better than to ask Talia if she'll give Mrs. Stilinski the bite and cure her ills. The bite is a gift only bequeathed to the worthy. Born werewolves are stronger than bitten ones, and their pack is already big enough. The fact that he ponders asking anyway is worrisome. He doesn't even know Mrs. Stilinski. He just can't bear the thought of what her death is going to do to Stiles. If he were Alpha, this wouldn't be a problem. But life is cruel to the innocent and the wicked alike. Little Derek finds his soulmate and it's sickening. The puppy laugh, holding hands and kisses on the nose. She's a human. The whole thing is liable to fall apart. Watching it from the outside makes Peter's stomach twist. He doesn't see Derek and the girl. He sees himself and Stiles. What if Stiles doesn't want a werewolf? Humans are fragile. What if Peter isn't careful enough and he hurts Stiles by accident? What if he's too old? What if Stiles doesn't feel the pull like Peter does? Some people have more than one soulmate. What if Stiles chooses someone else, someone that's his own age, and Peter is doomed to be alone with his own sins for the rest of his miserable days? In his heart, Peter is actually trying to help. But he should know better than to get involved. Anything he touches turns to poison and dust. The girl doesn't survive the bite, and Derek's eyes turn icy blue. He's never the same after that, and it's Peter's fault. Talia might have been able to forgive Peter for the change in his own eye color, but the change in Derek's eyes is a thing she'll always hate him for. Even if she lets him live in the house with the rest of the family, she doesn't trust him. Peter figures it's for the best. Most of the time, he doesn't even trust himself. The second time they meet, it's because Peter follows the scent of salt and panic. He finds Stiles in the middle of the woods, wearing a Boy Scouts uniform, sobbing his eyes out. Poor little thing must have gotten separated from the group. Peter emerges from between the trees in his human form, but he knows he still must look shady. After all, what sort of person runs around the preserve barefoot in the middle of October? "Hey kid, you lost?" Peter asks, trying to keep his voice steady. Stiles recoils and looks up at him in wide-eyed terror. But then he relaxes. It's almost instantaneous. The tension drains from his shoulders. "You scared me, mister." He takes a few deep breaths. "I'm not supposed to talk to strangers." "My name's Peter." "I'm Stiles." "There, we're not strangers anymore. Now let's find the rest of your troop before they get too worried about you, okay?" "Okay." Stiles nods. Peter starts walking, following the smell of sunscreen and nervous energy. Stiles trots along next to him, pink-cheeked and clumsy. He trips over roots and rocks, and Peter has to catch him by the shoulder several times to keep him from falling on his face. Eventually, Stiles grabs onto Peter's hand. Peter doesn't have the heart or the willpower to shake him off. "Why are you out in the woods?" Stiles asks, after they've been walking about 20 minutes. "I live out here."
"In a cave?"
"No, in a house."
"Why?"
"My whole family lives in a big house in these woods."
"Oh, my family lives in a regular house in a neighborhood. I like it, but it would also be fun to live out here in the trees. Except I probably get scared at night. I don't like the dark very much."
"You don't say." Peter snorts.
"My mommy says that it's okay to be afraid sometimes, but I get afraid kind of a lot. I don't like Boy Scouts or hikes, because I always worry that I'll get lost. And I'd never gotten lost, actually, before today. So now I think I'll just worry twice as much."
"Maybe you should quit Boy Scouts, then."
"My dad won't let me."
"I'll tell you what, there's no need to worry, because if you get lost again, I'll come find you."
"My daddy is a policeman. He finds people that are lost sometimes. Is that your job too?"
"Not exactly."
"Oh. Well, I sure am glad you found me. I didn't like being lost at all. It was scary. I guess you should probably be scary too, because of stranger danger. But you seem nice. I like holding your hand. Do you want to be friends?"
Peter makes the mistake of looking down at Stiles. The kid is staring up at him, eyes full of hope and innocence, smiling like nothing in the world will ever hurt him. Peter doesn't want the world to hurt him. But he knows it will. That's what life does. It takes naive, trusting children and turns them into hardened, weary adults.
Yeah, sure, I'll be your friend. Peter sighs.
You look sad, mister. Why are you sad?
No reason. When you grow up, sometimes you get sad about nothing at all.
Oh, my daddy gets sad sometimes too. And he also says it's nothing when I ask why. I don't really want to grow up. It doesn't seem like it's fun.
You've got that right.
Peter shakes his head. He can hear the rest of the Boy Scout troop in the distance, calling, Stiles, Stiles, where are you?
He should get out of here. He knows he should, but he doesn't want to let go just yet. So he walks with Stiles until the calls are audible to human ears.
All right, kid, I gotta leave now. Take care of yourself.
Peter tries to slip away, but Stiles keeps a hold on his hand.
Wait, don't go.
Why not?
Peter raises his eyebrows. I think you're not supposed to.
Stiles widens his eyes for emphasis.
I feel like you're supposed to stay.
You're right. Peter crouches down so he's at eye level with Stiles. I think I am supposed to stay eventually, but not quite yet.
Why?
That's just the way it is, kid. I'm sorry. And with that, Peter pulls away. He takes off running, leaving Stiles for his troop to find. The ache in his chest is worse that night than it's ever been. Peter kills again. It's a gray area between self-defense and a strange sadistic impulse he didn't realize he had. Peter doesn't stay in Beacon Hills during most full moons, because the temptation to seek Stiles out is too strong. Instead, he drives up the coast. He goes to the redwood forests, where he can run free and act like the wild animal he is. Peter still feels young, even if he's getting closer to 30 than 20. When he shifts, he feels right. Feral, aggressive. He's an apex predator and the world belongs to him. It's shaping up to be a good night. He's already killed a few rabbits and he's got the taste of fresh blood on his tongue. He's running, fast, free and reckless. Until he steps into a noose and gets jerked off the ground. The hunter appears from behind a tree. He's just a kid, probably no older than Derek. He smells like fear and the bravado of youth. He's all lanky limbs and no muscle tone. The tuft of blonde hair on his head blows back and forth in the breeze. He has the nerve to point a gun at Peter's chest.
You have blue eyes, the hunter's voice trembles with nerves. That means you're a killer. You've killed innocents.
I have, and I'm not sorry. Peter grins, displaying his sharp fangs. It's a series of split-second reactions. Peter curls into a ball and severs the noose with his claws. The kid fires and misses. Peter flies through the air. The kid fires again and grazes Peter's shoulder with a wolfsbane bullet. Peter pins the kid to the ground and rips his throat out. Maybe that's the moment Peter becomes a monster. The moment he takes the life of a young man and relishes it. It's not an accident. He could have just broken the kid's arms or legs, disabled him, neutralized the threat. But instead, he chose to kill. He mangles the body. He pries the hunter's ribcage open and eats his heart. It makes him feel savage and raw. It's a warning to any other hunters that dare come after him. Peter may not be an alpha yet, but he's still more dangerous than most wolves. He's dangerous because he's not whole, and he doesn't care about the difference between right and wrong. He's an omega within his family's pack. He's protected, but at the end of the day, he's a free agent. He answers to no one but himself. When Peter looks in the mirror, he sees a different person than he used to. His thin face has filled out, still handsome, with a chiseled jawline and slick smile, but there's something different. It's not just that he's become muscular, stronger, more intimidating. It's not just the beard that clings to his chin. There's something colder about him. He wonders if maybe this is what it looks like when someone's turned ugly on the inside. He's still a pretty package, but there's something not quite right about it. The lie is becoming more obvious. Or maybe to other people it isn't. When he goes out to the bars, he always manages to bring home a beautiful stranger. He fucks the living hell out of them and they beg for more. He leaves in the morning and never calls. He does it all over again the next weekend and nobody stops him. Sometimes he uses protection. Sometimes he doesn't. What does he care? It's not like he can carry diseases. One poor woman leaves him a voicemail. She's pregnant. She's keeping the baby. She doesn't want him in her life because he's toxic. Talia overhears Peter call her back to try to reason with her. Maybe he wants a child. Maybe a child would force him to straighten up and fly right. But Talia knows him. Knows that he would ruin that child's life. So she digs her claws into his neck and forces him to forget. Peter feels even emptier than usual for weeks afterwards, and he doesn't know why. He fills the void by continuing his little joyride of self-destruction. He can't ruin himself with drugs or alcohol, but he can certainly crash and burn on sex and violence. Every time his resolve breaks and he spends the night sitting in Stiles's backyard, he can smell that Mrs. Stilinski is close to death. He used to want to help her by curing her. Now he wonders if he should slip through the window and end her misery with claws and teeth. Peter drives far distances to kill without getting caught. He figures if hunters have been carrying out an ethnic cleansing of werewolves for generations upon generations, it's only fair he gives them a taste of their own medicine. He kills old men, young men, women and girls. Anybody that points a gun or a crossbow at his chest is fair game. Inflicting death makes him feel powerful. It makes him feel alive. He has dark fantasies about murdering his own sister, stealing her alphahood. He dreams about slashing her throat, and then he sits across the breakfast table from her and her children, and he makes polite conversation like nothing is wrong. But maybe that's becoming a Hale family tradition, pretending nothing is wrong. After all, little Derek is screwing an argent. Laura's eyes have turned icy and she's never said why. Cora cries at night because she acts like a wolf pup and that's not a good way to make friends with human children. So Peter chases every thrill he can find. Anything to distract himself from the ache in his chest. Anything to keep him from thinking about the innocent little boy that would no doubt run screaming if he saw the beast that Peter has become. You smell like blood, Peter. Talia is standing in the doorway, draped in a shawl. There are twigs in her hair. She must have just shifted, just gotten back from a run in the woods. So? Peter's lounging on his bed, recuperating. There are no cuts or bruises on his skin, but he's still sore. He drove to Nevada, through the desert, to stalk and kill three hunters. No reason behind it. He just wanted to. You smell like human blood, Talia snarls. Peter sits up and swings his legs over the edge of the mattress. What are you going to do about it? He asks, calm, flat, unflinching. Nobody else talks to his sister that way. She doesn't know how to deal with it. He can almost see her hackles rising. Children live in this house. If you're going to act like a beast, you can't stay here. Fine. He shrugs. I'll start looking for an apartment. Why are you doing this? She's almost shouting. We're predators. Killing is what we're made for. You're not just a wolf, Peter. You're human too. I can see you trying to forget it, but you have a choice. You always have a choice. Then maybe I'm killing people because I like it. Peter lets a twisted grin slide across his face. Talia turns her back and storms out. He doesn't know it, but that's the last real conversation he'll ever have with her. The third time they meet, Peter follows the smell of misery. It's just after sunset. He finds Stiles sitting in the hospital parking lot, near the same spot Peter sat the first time he heard the kid's heartbeat. Peter doesn't have to ask to know what's wrong. The smell of death clings to the poor kid's clothes. Stiles doesn't notice when Peter first sits down next to him. When he looks up, he jolts with surprise. Then he holds his breath, like he's trying to stop crying. It doesn't work. Peter wraps an arm around the kid's narrow shoulders and they sit there as Stiles sobs for almost an hour. You're the man from the woods, Stiles hiccups, when there are no tears left to cry, when he's all dried up. Yeah, Peter sighs. He should be surprised that Stiles remembers him. But he isn't. That day stands out in his head too. It's one of the last beacons of light in the swirling darkness. Peter is 29, which must make Stiles 11. Still much too young. and Peter is much too broken. It's never going to work between them. Fate only threw them together to make both of their lives more miserable. Are you going to leave again? Styles fists a small hand in Peter's shirt. It's heartbreaking. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kit. If you're sorry, then don't leave. What do you want me to do? Come back and live at your house? I don't know. That day in the woods was the only time I've ever felt right and not scared. The words are so quiet, human ears probably wouldn't pick them up. Peter looks down at the hand clutching his shirt. Sure enough, there's a scar on the ring finger that matches his. Peter's never thought about it before, but this whole situation might be even more cruel to Styles than it is to him. After all, the way Peter lives, he's probably going to die early. He's already used to dealing with the pain. But Styles is just a child, a now motherless child, with a cold-blooded murderer of a soulmate who is 3 times his age. It's such rotten luck, it doesn't even seem like it should be possible. You're better off without me. Peter chews on his lower lip. That can't be true. They stay like that for a long time, until Deputy Stilinski steps out of the hospital doors and starts calling Styles' name. Peter gives him one last hug and then vanishes into the shadows. He's going to move very far away. He's never going to inflict his presence upon the poor kid again. Before Peter gets a chance to run away from his problems, the house burns down, with his whole family inside it. Peter's in the shower, screaming from the pain, and all he can think about is how much it's going to hurt Styles when he dies. There's a long span of darkness, and from the void comes light. Peter wakes up 5 years older and barely able to move. He doesn't waste a lot of time wondering why he survived when so many decent people died. He understands that life has a sick sense of humor. Sometimes it's easier to weather catastrophe when you're hollow inside. He does what he knows how to do best. He seeks out power, and when he gets it, he brings down a storm of violent retribution. It doesn't matter that he has to kill Laura. After all, he was ready to kill Talia. What's one more life in the grand scheme of things? Becoming the Alpha is everything he dreamed it would be. The rush of power. The sense of purpose. He feels complete and sovereign for the first time in his life. Maybe he's actually torn to pieces and murder is the only coping mechanism he ever developed. It's also possible that he avenges his sister's death because he knows she wouldn't want him to. Either way, everybody responsible for the fire dies one by one. He bites a teenager for the kicks, then bites a banshee because it's always good to have a failsafe. He turns the whole town upside down. He finds out Derek is alive and recruits him to the cause. Ripping Kate Argent's throat out is the greatest pleasure Peter has ever known. Then, of course, Derek turns on him and shows Peter exactly how much damage was done the day his young eyes turned blue. It's all perfect and symmetrical when Derek's claws slash through Peter's throat. Peter wasn't meant to survive the fire anyway. He was living on borrowed time. As the lights go out, he wonders if his backup plan will work. He almost hopes it doesn't. The span of void isn't as long as the coma, but when Peter wakes up, everything has shifted. The first thing he feels is the incredible pain in his chest. It's a tie that was severed at his death, reinstating itself. The second thing he feels is an overwhelming desire to just crawl back into the ground. He's a monster. He doesn't deserve another chance at life when he only exists to be a living poison to make everyone else miserable. But Peter pushes through. He hijacks exactly half of the $1 million in life insurance payouts that are in Derek's bank account. He gets himself an apartment downtown where he can curl up and lick his wounds. He thinks about every sin he's ever perpetrated and doesn't feel a trace of remorse. But he feels no joy either. Only a few moments in his pathetic existence have really mattered, and they all had to do with Styles. The Stilinski family moved to a different house. No surprise there. They probably needed to escape memories of the dead mother. It doesn't take long for Peter to find them. Peter is 35, so that makes Styles 17. And it's a funny thought that maybe going into a long coma wasn't the worst thing that's ever happened to him. Peter is a strategist. He knows enough to sit back and watch for a while. After all, there's no rush. He situates himself in the trees behind the house and observes the fragile young man his mate has become. At first, Peter tries to deny the pattern. He sees the sheriff leave the house every morning, and he can hear Stiles' nervous heartbeat, but Stiles doesn't go out the front door, or the back door, or even a window. He stays inside. Peter wonders if maybe Stiles is ill, but at night he gets close enough to stick his nose in a window and he smells nothing but health. The days go on. The evidence starts to stack up. Whenever the doorbell rings, be it the mailman or a neighbor wanting to borrow a wrench, Stiles' pulse skyrockets. Peter can smell the fear. It's even worse if Stiles ventures outside. Once or twice, he makes an appearance in the backyard to water the flower beds. The whole exercise is haphazard, like Stiles is trying to get it over with as fast as possible. The little boy has turned into a gangly, pale young man. He still has those same white-brown eyes and the adorable moles on his chin. His hair still sticks up at strange angles and he's clumsy as ever. But he's become twitchy. He reeks of a constant low-grade terror. Every second he's outside, he seems closer to a panic attack. It becomes apparent that Stiles does not leave the house to go to school or play sports or see his friends. It seems he does online classes from his living room. His father brings home food. Every once in a while, Scott McCall, coincidentally the teenager that Peter gave the bite to, shows up and they play video games for a few hours. That's it. Peter's never seen such a case of agoraphobia. He's not sure what to do about it, if there's anything that can be done about it. Peter can't help but wonder if he's partially responsible. After all, he did die. That can't have been easy to deal with. Losing a soulmate is supposed to be horribly painful on both emotional and physical levels. Some people commit suicide because they can't handle it. And the poor kid's mom passed away when he was still so young. His whole life is probably twisted around loss and grieving. Peter feels a pang of guilt and it's confusing. He's used to knowing that he's done wrong, but he's not used to regretting it. He's used to burning bridges and laughing at the fallout, not wishing he'd handled things better. For a brief moment, he wonders if his whole life has been a mistake. Maybe he wasn't born to be the villain like he's always thought. Maybe he's just been afraid of experiencing any real emotions because they hurt too much. Peter shoves the letter through the mail slot, rings the doorbell and disappears. He slinks back off to the woods and feels ridiculous for playing ding-dong ditch with a teenager. But he didn't see what other choices he had. Technically, he's a missing person at this point. Both he and the nurse he killed. He can't just waltz into the sheriff's house. Not without having to fabricate some elaborate backstory about where he's been the past few months. He'd have to invent a kidnapper. He'd also have to explain how he miraculously came out of the burn ward with perfect skin and no need for a wheelchair. It's all too much of a hassle to bother with yet. He's an idiot. The letter is probably just going to scare Stiles even further into his shell. But he had to try. He had to at least apologize. It was probably just wishful thinking to scribble his cell phone number on the inside of the envelope. Stiles isn't going to call. He'd have to be crazy to call. Peter still spends the rest of the afternoon staring at his cell phone, wishing for the impossible. Hello there, Stiles. This is Peter, the man from the woods. I'm not sure if you remember me. I hope you do. I know it's been a long time. Please believe me when I say I never disappeared by choice. A series of unavoidable catastrophes all converged on my life at once, and I'm so very sorry you were affected by the fallout. I've had several near-death experiences in the past few years. By all logic, I shouldn't be breathing right now. But I am. It's led me to reflect upon my life and some of my decisions. I've been given a second chance, and I'm not sure it's worth taking unless you're a part of it. Before, you were too small to understand, but now I'm sure you must have some idea what the scar on your ring finger means. I have one just like it. I know I don't deserve someone like you. You're so young and you have so much potential. I'm about as broken as it gets. But if you're willing to give this thing a shot, I will try to be a better person. If you don't want me in your life, I'll understand and I'll leave you alone. Either way, I love you. I always have. And again, I'm sorry. Yours, Peter.
Is your last name Hale?
Peter stares down at the text from an unknown number. It's almost 4 o'clock in the morning. He fell asleep on his couch, watching Friends reruns.
Is this Stiles?
He hits send before he can talk himself out of it.
Yes, are you Peter Hale?
Every instinct Peter has screams at him to lie, because if Stiles is asking, he must know something. After all, his father is a cop. He's friends with Scott McCall.
Yes.
Peter waits for the imminent rejection. He waits for Stiles to call him a psychopath, a murderer. Tell him to never come anywhere near him. But there are no more texts. Just radio silence, long into the night. Peter turns off the TV and crawls into bed. He falls asleep again, wishing he could hear Stiles' heartbeat.
You tried to kill my friends.
The text comes about 3 days after the first one. Peter almost feels ashamed about the fact that he's sitting in the woods behind Stiles' house when his phone buzzes. Almost. To be fair, if I'd known they were your friends, I would have left them alone.
So murder is fine as long as it's not anybody you have a personal relationship with. Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm a wolf. We're predators. It's what we do.
Not Scott or Derek.
Derek slashed my throat open and buried me under the floorboards of our old house.
So it wasn't near death. You actually died. I knew it. Fuck you, asshole. Do you have any idea how much that hurt?
Probably not as much as the actual death.
You died quick. The pain didn't drag out for months. When it stopped, I thought maybe it was finally over. But no, that just meant you were back to fuck things up more. I hate you.
So you don't want to hear my side of the story?
No. You're a liar and a murderer.
Would you believe I wanted to change?
That's what liars always say.
Do you believe that I love you?
I wish you didn't.
Peter's phone buzzes. Not once for a text, multiple times. Must be a phone call. He's sitting at his kitchen table, staring at the bottle of wine, lamenting the fact that he can't drink his troubles away like a normal person.
Hello?
I don't want your stupid ring. I put it back out on the porch. Take it. Stiles' voice is unsteady. Peter can hear his hummingbird heartbeat through the phone speaker.
It's a gift, Stiles.
Accepting it doesn't mean you owe me anything. Keep it.
Peter licks his lips.
I will actually throw it away if you don't take it back.
Fine by me. Do whatever you want with it.
You're such a creep, Stiles mutters. But he doesn't hang up. The silence stretches out. Stiles' heartbeat slows down, almost like he's relaxing.
How was your day? Peter asks as he takes a swig of wine straight from the bottle.
Why do you care?
Because I care about you.
No, you don't. You don't even know me. All you care about is some stupid soul bond that neither of us agreed to. It's selfish. You just want to be near me so it won't hurt anymore.
That's not what you want, too.
Peter tries to keep the amusement out of his voice.
I'd rather be in pain than spend time with the likes of you.
Ever since I woke up, I've been smelling your anxiety. How long have you been suffering from panic attacks?
Pretty much since my mom died.
Not that it's any of your business.
I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I was in a coma.
I know.
Stiles' voice gets a little quieter.
I kind of felt it. Not like when you died, but I knew something was wrong. And I mean, once I figured out who you were, when Scott told me the Alpha was dead the day after it felt like somebody ripped my chest open and surgically removed my heart, well, I did a little research. Clever boy. Peter smiles. I can't believe I spent so much of my childhood wondering when you'd come back for me, only to find out that you're literally a monster. I know. I've always thought that mark on your finger was a terrible injustice to you. But fate is a cruel mistress. Don't talk about it like everything's out of your control. You're the one that decided to kill all those people. Nobody made you do it. I was avenging my family. We're not living in a goddamn Shakespeare play. You're a violent psychopath. Vendettas and bloody rampages are not normal everyday occurrences. But star-crossed love seems to be. Did you just compare us to Romeo and Juliet? I'm gonna puke. Keep the ring, Styles. Peter hangs up. You did not just leave a fucking bouquet of roses on my porch. What even? I'm not some princess in a tower to be wooed. They're just flowers. If you don't like them, throw them away. Ugh. You like them. How did you find me that day in the woods? Were you stalking me? No. You were by my house. I smelled that you were scared. I decided to go help you. And what about the night my mom died? I felt a little bit of your pain, and you were so upset I could smell it halfway across town. And the fire happened a few days after that. When you woke up from your coma, why didn't you just come find me? I thought if I became the Alpha, I wouldn't need you anymore. I was wrong. Do you still kill people? Stiles' voice is quiet. It's the middle of the night. Peter is sprawled across his bed. It's only a few days to the full moon. His first one since he was resurrected. I haven't lately. Peter sighs. Would you? Do you have plans for any more murders? No, but I can't promise it will stay that way forever. I don't understand how you can be so terrible if we're meant to be together. I'm not that terrible. I'm a pretty decent guy, all things considered. I've definitely never killed anybody. Like, do you at least feel bad about it? Not really. Christ. I don't want to lie to you. That's not going to help anyone. So, what? I'm just supposed to accept you the way you are, psychosis and all. I'm not the only one here with problems, Styles. When was the last time you even left your house? The silence makes Peter's stomach twist. He's not used to this. Saying hurtful things should give him a rush, not make him feel sick. I can't control it, okay? Styles spits the words out, bitter, dripping with venom. The panic attacks come out of fucking nowhere, and then I get anxiety about getting anxiety. You certainly didn't help the situation by turning my best friend into a creature of the night, trying to kill everyone I love, and then dying. It's even worse now than it was before. I'm sorry. Are you really? Yes. I used to be able to go out, but I don't know. The medication got less effective, and the side effects got worse, so I stopped taking it. Also, I now know that monsters are real, and I'm soul bonded to one of them. Do you blame me for not wanting to go outside when I know what could be lurking in the dark? My anxiety isn't even unreasonable anymore. I am actually risking death every time I step out of my house. It doesn't have to be like that. I could protect you. Are you kidding? I need protection from you. Styles, I would never hurt you. You know that, right? That's the thing I don't think you understand. You already hurt me. More than anyone else ever could. How am I supposed to trust you? Maybe I've been reborn a different man. Have you? I'm not sure. It's quiet for a while. Peter takes comfort in the fact that Styles' heartbeat is slow and steady. Don't kill anyone on the full moon, okay? Stiles says after a few minutes have dragged by. Okay. Peter doesn't shift. He spends the full moon locked up in his apartment, eating Chinese takeout and watching slasher films so he can revel in the bloodshed vicariously. The next morning, he sends off a text. The sun has risen. The body count is still at zero. You don't get a cookie for not murdering anyone. That's like a pretty common social expectation that billions of people meet every day. It's even the first commandment. Why would it need to be a commandment if nobody but me ever committed murder? Oh my God. You're not proud of me. For doing the actual bare minimum thing you need to do in order to be a normal human being. Yes. I mean, if that's a big achievement for you, then yeah, I guess so. Progress is good. The texts keep coming. Not every day, but every few days. So, have you always been terrible, or is it a more recent development? I've probably gotten worse as I got older. Did your parents not hug you enough? No, I think I was born with a few things missing. The universe must hate me. When I was 11, I thought you were Prince fucking Charming or something. How wrong I was. Who needs a prince? Villains are much more interesting. Head desk. As time marches on, Stiles seems to become less overtly hostile. Instead, things seem to swing more in the direction of mild curiosity, then actual interest. Did you go to college? No. What did you do instead? I lived in Seattle, bartended, partied like a normal 20-something. Imagining you as a normal anything is kinda hard. Then again, I only have vague memories about what you look like. Do you want a picture? Okay. Peter snaps a quick photograph on his phone. The lighting is shit. He's probably looked better, but he sends it anyway. God damn it. What? Of course you're hot. Yeah, I kinda am. Do you want to see me? Or have you been creeping outside my window at night? What sort of weirdo do you think I am? Of course Peter's not going to admit to how often he sits in the woods outside Stiles' house. But that's not the same thing as looking in somebody's window while they're sleeping. When his phone vibrates again, it's a multimedia message. He opens it. Stiles looks to be sitting on his couch. His hair is messy and he's in a baggy t-shirt, but he's smiling. It looks like a genuine smile. It tugs at something in Peter's chest and his whole body floods with warmth. You're beautiful. I'm a man. Men can be beautiful, but I'll call it handsome if you prefer. Have you ever loved anyone else? I'm not a virgin, if that's what you're asking. You know what I mean. I think it's safe to say you're the only person on the planet I've ever had an actual feeling towards. A whole feeling? Just for me? Wow. You're a sarcastic little shit. You're a murderer. Touché. My dad is gone, visiting his sister this weekend. Is that an invitation? It's a request for NyQuil, ginger ale, saltines, chicken soup, and no funny stuff. I have a cold and I feel like shit. There's a key under the mat. You will put it back after dropping off the supplies. Okay. Peter has never been sick before. Well, not with a virus. So he doesn't really know what to expect. He knows humans are fragile, but the only personal experience he has with it is from ripping their throats out. Things like the common cold are a disgusting mystery. All he can really gather is that sick humans leak mucus and sleep a lot. He's got a bag of groceries on his arm and he's standing on Stiles' doorstep. The whole thing feels strange and domestic. This is the sort of stuff he'd never be caught dead doing for anyone else. But as it is, he slips the key out from underneath the doormat and unlocks the front door. The house smells of illness and misery. The blinds are all drawn. The television is on. Stiles' heartbeat is sluggish. He must be dozing. Peter knows he shouldn't stay. He's little more than a glorified delivery boy. But he can't help it. He closes the door behind him. There's a big pile of shoes shoved against the wall. So Peter kicks his off as well before walking down the hall into the living room. Stiles is sprawled across the couch, eyes closed, drooling onto a pillow. He looks so young and innocent. He looks like the sort of thing Peter should never be allowed to touch. But the ache in Peter's chest is gone. He sets the NyQuil and the bottle of ginger ale on the coffee table and takes the food into the kitchen. He doesn't really even think about it. He just opens a can of soup and starts heating it on the stove. Like this is his house. Like he belongs here. He hears Stiles stirring, groaning and snuffling. By the time Peter brings the soup out, Stiles has his eyes open. He blinks a few times like he isn't sure whether or not he's really awake. "Don't worry." Peter sets the bowl down on the table. "Just figured I'd save you the effort of getting up." Stiles' gaze drops to the soup before dragging back up to Peter. "I didn't poison it. Scout's honor." Peter grins, wondering if it's obvious how uncomfortable he is. "You asshole," Stiles snorts. "We haven't seen each other in 6 years and you come in here to watch me sleep when I'm all sick and gross and you're fucking perfect. God, get out of here." "I wasn't watching you sleep for very long." Peter shrugs. "I know, I felt it when you came in." Stiles pulls himself up to a seated position. He does look miserable. Pale and sweaty with dark circles under his eyes. But he's still the most beautiful thing Peter's ever laid eyes on. He opens his mouth and is halfway to saying it before he reins himself back in. "Do you really want me to leave?" Peter raises an eyebrow. "I don't know." Stiles reaches for the NyQuil. He unscrews the cap and takes a liberal swig. "You want to stay and watch me sneeze everywhere?" It might be more sarcasm than actual invitation, but Peter settles down on the couch next to Stiles anyway. The low mumbling of the television fills the silence. Stiles eats the soup and knocks back some of the ginger ale. They don't talk about it. Their bodies just kind of gravitate together. They rearrange so Stiles can lie down again. Peter spoons him, drapes an arm around his chest. Stiles is asleep again within minutes. Peter is content to just lie there and hold him. When it gets late, Peter carries Stiles up to his bedroom. The kid only half wakes up during the process. All he does is groan and press his face into Peter's neck. They climb the stairs and walk through the open door at the end of the hall. Peter tries to set Stiles down on the mattress, but Stiles clings to him. "Don't go," Stiles mumbles. So Peter gets into bed with him. He puts the comforter over them and lets Stiles curl against him. It's the happiest he's ever felt. He wonders what he's going to do to wreck it. Peter stays in the house another day and night, lazing around on the couch, making Stiles food and soothing him to sleep, before the imminent threat of the sheriff's return forces him to go back to his apartment. But after that, Stiles starts sending him on a lot of daytime errands. At first, he asks for things he actually needs, like Tylenol, milk, and dish soap. Then he starts demanding ice cream at 9 o'clock in the morning and sending Peter to GameStop for the newest Grand Theft Auto release. The excuses get more and more flimsy, and eventually they just turn into an open invitation for Peter to come by whenever the sheriff isn't home. They fall into a sort of routine. Every morning after the sheriff leaves the house, Peter slips in the back door. Stiles makes them breakfast. Then they usually go back to bed, because left to his own devices, Stiles is the sort of insomniac that won't sleep for days on end until he collapses from exhaustion. He's almost like a child. He always insists he isn't tired as Peter ushers him up the stairs towards the bedroom. But then he passes out the second Peter pushes him onto the bed. Peter has never shared a mattress with someone for more than a night. It's strange to spend so much time in Stiles' bedroom and never take his clothes off. But it's satisfying in a different way. Sometimes Peter falls asleep too. Sometimes he doesn't. Stiles usually wakes up at about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, at which point they eat again. They watch television or play video games, which Peter loses at, until they hear the sheriff's car in the driveway. Then Peter is banned from the house, and Stiles spends the evening doing the online classwork he put off during the day. It's all very warm fuzzy. Peter keeps expecting to get bored of it. After all, they don't really do much, since Stiles refuses to leave the house. They press their bodies together, but it's not all that sexual. Really, Peter is spending his life hanging around a dumb teenager that's unconscious half the time they're together and blabbering about Halo and Bioshock when he's awake. But it's the most at peace Peter has ever felt. He's not quite as broken as he used to be. Sure, he's not perfect. He still has his bad days. Sometimes he snaps at Stiles. Sometimes he gets a selfish, savage impulse to shift and spend his waking hours running through the woods, killing small animals. Still, it no longer feels like he's missing fundamental building blocks of his humanity. He almost feels whole. Where have you been? Stiles doesn't sound angry. It wouldn't be so bad if he sounded angry. But he's just sitting there, at the kitchen table, staring down into a bowl of cereal, and he looks empty. I'm sorry. Peter leans against the doorway. He doesn't feel like he has the right to get any closer. Sorry isn't a place. Some things came up. Peter drums his fingers against the wall. He hadn't thought word that he was alive would get out so quick. He thought he had more time. I took care of it as fast as I could. And you didn't have your phone with you? You couldn't have texted? Peter chews on his lip. He's not sure if telling Stiles why he disappeared for a week and a half is going to make anything better. Then again, what other options does he have if he doesn't want to lie? I've done some really bad things in my life, Stiles. Peter clears his throat. I'm not done paying for some of them. There are a lot of people in the world that would like to put me back in the ground. Stop it. I thought you weren't going to leave again. I was stupid to believe that, wasn't I? Stiles turns around. He's not crying. His shoulders are hunched over. There are dark circles under his eyes. He probably hasn't slept much since Peter's been gone. Peter feels an overwhelming lurch of guilt come crashing down on him. I got kidnapped. Peter sighs, staring at the ground, avoiding eye contact. The family of some hunters I killed a while back. Well, they heard I'd pulled out of the coma and they came looking for me. Did you kill them? I didn't have a choice. If I'd left them alive, they would have come back. And they might have found you. I couldn't let them do anything to you. Great, Stiles snorts. Not only am I bonded to a mass murderer, but he's killing people to protect me. Fucking Christ, Peter. What am I supposed to do with that? I don't know. Is this going to be a regular occurrence? Do I have to worry about people coming to offers in our sleep? I won't let anyone hurt you. Oh my God! Stiles stands up. In a split second, he's nose to nose with Peter. When he shoves Peter in the chest, the shock of it knocks him back against the wall more than the actual force. You can't fucking die again, okay? Stiles is breathing like he's on the verge of hyperventilation. I don't even care if something happens to me. I can't take losing you. I just can't. So you need to get your shit together, or... He's choking on the words. He reeks of panic. Stiles. Peter reaches out and places a hand on the kid's trembling shoulder. Breathe. Fuck you. You're not allowed to cause all these problems and then pretend like I'm the one that's being unreasonable. It's your fault I'm like this. I wish I'd never met you. The tears are starting to well up at the corners of his eyes. Peter can hear how fast Stiles' heart is beating. Each breath is jerky and irregular. He doesn't know what to do. All he can do is follow his instincts. He pulls Stiles in close and holds him. Stiles doesn't fight it. He sags against Peter's body. The tears keep flowing, soaking into Peter's shirt. But Stiles' pulse slows down to safer levels. It's a long time before he stops trembling, before the flow of salt water ends.
I love you, Peter murmurs.
Stiles lifts his head up to look at him. His cheeks are wet. His eyes are red and puffy. He's so very fragile, so vulnerable, so human.
You are the biggest asshole I've ever met.
Stiles' voice is shaky. For a moment, Peter isn't sure whether Stiles is going to press closer or pull away. Then he tilts forward and their lips crash together. It's too savage to be a kiss. It's a desperate smear of lips, tongues and teeth. It's a reaffirmation of life. They are both here, two hearts still beating for each other. All either of them can do is hold on for the ride. It's over as abruptly as it started. They break apart and Stiles hasn't quite regained his balance, but things seem a little less precarious than they did a few minutes ago. Peter carries him up to bed and Stiles sleeps for the rest of the day. Peter stays until he hears the sheriff's car approaching in the distance. Stiles is still angry for the next couple of weeks, but then they relax back into their normal routine. Peter doesn't disappear for more than a day or two at a time. Stiles doesn't get frustrated enough to tell him to leave for good. Peter knows that the problems aren't over. They've just started. His past is going to follow him, even if he wants to be a different man. But for now, the danger is far away enough to ignore. Peter wakes up to warm breath on his cheek. He opens his eyes. The afternoon sunlight streams in the window above him. Stiles is staring at him. Their faces are inches apart.
You look almost harmless when you're asleep, Stiles whispers.
Peter's on the verge of a snarky retort when Stiles closes the distance and kisses him. At first, it's a hesitant brush of lips. Stiles' pulse quickens when Peter returns the pressure, when he drapes an arm around Stiles' waist and pulls him closer. Stiles places a tentative hand on Peter's chest, almost right over his heart. Their mouths slide open. Peter takes the lead, flicks his tongue between Stiles' lips, retreats to get him to chase. Stiles moans. Their tongues touch sporadically. Peter has to keep pulling back and pressing forward, teaching Stiles not to open his mouth too wide without using any words. Stiles catches on. He gets a little more aggressive. The sleepy, sweet kiss turns into something wet and eager. Stiles rolls his hips. Peter can feel the heat of his erection.
I've never, Stiles gasps when they break apart. I want to.
Better men would say no. They would wait the few months until Stiles turns 18. Then again, nobody ever presses charges for corruption of a minor when there's a soul bond involved. And Peter might not be such a horrible person these days, but he's still not a good one. So he undresses them. He rolls on top of Stiles, and the drag of skin against skin is intoxicating. Sometimes when Peter comes over in the morning, Stiles smells like lube and his own cum. So it's easy to infer that he keeps the stuff around. Peter hazards a guess at the top drawer of the bedside table. He's not wrong. He grabs the half-empty tube of KY and flicks the cap open.
Oh my god, do you go through my stuff while I'm asleep?
Stiles still has a lazy grin hitched across his face.
No, you're just predictable.
Peter wraps a slick hand around Stiles' cock before the kid has a chance to be offended. Stiles' mouth falls open. He spreads his legs so Peter can settle between them. Peter presses soft kisses against his neck and strokes his cock a few times. Then he adjusts his grip to create a tight circle of flesh around both their pricks. Peter starts to thrust. The slippery friction is blissful. Their cocks slide against each other. Stiles clutches at Peter's shoulders. The kid's heart is racing. He smells like musky arousal and an overload of teenage hormones. This is going to be over quick, but Peter doesn't care. Sex has always been about escapism. It's been about avoidance, dissociation, cheap physical pleasure, and a distracting jolt of endorphins. This is different. Peter feels like such a goddamn cliché. All his life, people have been telling him, one day you'll find the right person and everything will change. He never believed it. He thought it was all a big fairy tale, the sort of stuff you tell a kid to shelter them from the horrors of life. but Stiles is staring up at him with big brown eyes, and there's nothing else in the world he could possibly want. There's a warm, desperate sensation rising in his chest. He thought that once you fell in love, that was it. He didn't know you can keep falling deeper and deeper. He didn't know that love was like quicksand. And the most disturbing part of it is how little he cares that he'll never be able to escape. Stiles starts to match Peter's thrusts. He's making the most pathetic, choked-off whimpers. Peter feels the tension gathering at the base of his spine. Every nerve in his body is oversensitized. His whole life has been focused on waiting for the future or running from the past. It's possible this is the first moment Peter has truly experienced in the present tense. As a consequence, everything is slowed down to a jerky halftime. The whole room smells like their combined scent. With all the transference of body heat, their skin is the same temperature. Their pulses have fallen into pace with each other. Peter presses a kiss against Stiles' lips, and it's like completing a circuit. It's a flare of white-hot pleasure and an urge to chase. They speed up. Stiles sticks his nails into Peter's back. "I love you." The words spill from Stiles' lips like he couldn't keep them in any longer. Maybe Stiles didn't even mean to say them. After all, he never has before. Still, Peter growls. He mouths at Stiles' neck, teeth itching to bite, to mark, to claim. The mattress creaks beneath them. Stiles gasps. He tenses. Then, with a final broken moan, he shudders and comes. His ejaculate spills between them, adding to the slickness. The smell alone is almost enough to send Peter over the edge. He lets go of Stiles' cock and just rots against his sticky stomach. Stiles is still breathing heavy in Peter's ear, still holding him close. Their chests are pressed against each other. The thread between their hearts, the bond that's been tugging them together for almost 18 years, has finally succeeded. And Peter can let go. He can surrender to it. He's glad to lose this war. Maybe he's ready to be saved. Not by a higher power, but by a sarcastic teenager that thinks Pop-Tarts are an acceptable meal at any hour of the day and is afraid of answering his own doorbell. Maybe they'll save each other. Maybe they'll just be fucked up together for the rest of their lives. Either way, Peter's excited to find out. The orgasm is sudden. It demolishes him. He grunts. His cock jerks. He drowns in the rush of reward chemicals and collapses on top of Stiles. They stay like that for a while, both panting, high on each other. Then Stiles plants a kiss on Peter's cheek. Peter turns his head and lifts up enough so he can smear their mouths together, slow and gentle once again. "Wow." Stiles giggles when the kiss tapers off. "Is it always like that?" "I don't know. I've never fucked my soulmate before." Peter rolls onto his side. Stiles rearranges and crowds against him. But you're going to be fucking him a lot in the near future, right?" "Of course. I intend to fuck him so hard he won't be able to walk right for a week." "What makes you think that I'm going to let you top?" Stiles bites his plump lower lip. "I suppose that can be negotiated. We can have a rotation. You top on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and every other Sunday." "We're gonna have sex every day!" Stiles' eyes widen. He sounds a little breathless. "Unless you have other important engagements to attend to. I mean, I know you've got a busy schedule." Stiles kisses him again. Probably to shut him up, but Peter doesn't mind. One morning, Stiles comes downstairs with a ring on his finger. Peter recognizes it as the one he left on the porch a few months ago, the one Stiles claimed he was going to throw away. It fits. The pale gold band sits on Stiles' finger, right beneath the white scar that brought them together. Peter doesn't say anything. He just catches Stiles around the waist and pulls him into a slow kiss. They make pancakes for breakfast. The whole kitchen gets covered in flour, and of course, Peter has to clean it up after Stiles goes to sleep. Peter starts wearing a ring too, a gold band to match the one he gave Stiles. At some point, they'll still need to sign all the papers and maybe have a ceremony if Peter ever manages to get Sheriff Stilinski's blessings. But right then, the gesture of wearing matching rings seems to matter more than any of the traditions that go along with it. "Are you ready?" "Yeah, I guess so." Stiles lets out a long breath. They're standing on the threshold of his front door. It's the middle of the morning. All of the town's good citizens are at work or school. There's nobody around to see them. But of course, that doesn't help much. Stiles smells like panic, like the edge of a breakdown. Peter's almost ready to suggest they try this another day. But then Stiles grabs his hand and laces their fingers together. He takes a few hesitant steps out onto the porch and Peter follows. Stiles squeezes Peter's hand harder. His pulse increases, but they go down the front steps to stand on the driveway. I've only been down here to get the mail once in the past 6 months. Stiles' voice is shaky, but he's still breathing. He hasn't hyperventilated yet. You're doing so well. Peter keeps his words even, calm. His veins turn black for a moment as he siphons away some of the anxiety. If Stiles notices, he doesn't say anything. His shoulders are still tense, but he takes another few steps forward. They make it to the end of the driveway. Standing there, looking out onto the quiet neighborhood, it's hard for Peter to comprehend the sort of fear Stiles must be experiencing. But maybe it shouldn't be. After all, he understands abandonment. He knows what it's like to lose everything. He knows more than anything what it's like to feel powerless against the larger forces of life and death. The only real difference is the coping mechanism. Instead of lashing out, Stiles withdrew. This is just the first step in a long process. They both know that. Stiles will have to get back on medication. They'll have to build their way up to bigger trips out of the house. Peter will have to introduce himself to the sheriff in a formal manner. They will eventually have to expose their rather unconventional relationship to the world at large, and, soul bond or not, people are going to judge them. Sometimes, though, it's more important to look at the immediate victory than the battles ahead. Feels good to breathe fresh air. Stiles shuffles a little closer to lean against Peter. Yeah, it does. I didn't think we'd make it this far. And Stiles could be talking about a lot of things. Physical distance, emotional, past, present, future. Neither did I, but I'm glad we're here. The end.